Mm-hmm. So maybe you can trace the clinical research database there, how it was fitting into practice until recently at the SGO meeting where we saw new data in the maintenance setting in the SOLO2 trial.
Yeah. So the situation in the US has been different from the rest of the world insofar as the license for olaparib is in patients who've had three or more lines of chemotherapy and carry a germline BRCA mutation. And that's as a single agent on the basis that these patients are not likely to do very well with chemotherapy. There was an unmet need. And on the basis of a study, a phase two study actually, that looked at a cohort of women with ovarian cancer, active ovarian cancer, treated with olaparib, the FDA gave approval for single agent olaparib, where, you know, we know that the benefit in terms of disease control rate is a sort of median of about 7 months. So that was the case in the US. The rest of the world had a different license. It was not based on those data. It was based on the Study 19 maintenance trial, and it was based on the group of women who had a BRCA mutation and then had olaparib. The FDA, for all sorts of rather complicated reasons, decided not to grant approval for maintenance on Study 19 and asked the company to provide more data in a randomized phase three trial confined to patients who had a BRCA mutation. And that was the basis of the SOLO2 trial that was presented at the SGO. That incidentally used a different formulation of olaparib, not the capsule formulation, which is not terribly palatable for patients. It requires them to take 8 capsules twice a day, so 16 capsules a day, whereas the tablet formulation of 300 milligrams twice daily, just 4 tablets, so much easier for patients to manage. So the design of the trial was virtually identical to the Study 19, except it only included patients with a BRCA mutation. It did not include BRCA wild-type patients. And those data presented at the SGO showed a highly significant improvement in progression-free survival when olaparib was given compared to placebo. It showed the tolerability that we were anticipating, very similar spectrum of side effects to the capsules, relatively low dropout rate due to toxicity. And this drug has been granted fast-track approval pathway by the FDA.
So I know you're not supposed to do indirect comparisons, but it is interesting that if you look at the SOLO2 trial, as I read it here, the hazard rate for PFS was 0.30, right?
You know, yes.
Pretty impressive, 7% reduction. But it's interesting, in the niraparib study, the hazard rate for BRCA mutation was 0.27, almost identical.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's very little to choose between the two drugs. 0.27, I should just add, was in the germline BRCA cohort.
Isn't that what it was here with SOLO2 also?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly, that's what I was saying, exactly. Was the same, right.
Yes, in the same groups of patients. So
right.
I think there's little to choose between the two drugs in terms of efficacy.
You know, there's always going to be regulatory issues. And I guess also there's the issue of using one PARP inhibitor after receiving another. Is there any evidence that that should be considered?
Yeah. So at the moment, we really don't have the data, but it's important that those trials are done, that we look at rechallenging with a PARP inhibitor, possibly a different PARP inhibitor, after a patient has failed on one PARP inhibitor. I think what one would normally do is to intersperse with chemotherapy rather than just immediately shift to a PARP inhibitor, but it partly depends on the context in which that's being tested.